He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Bill Withers, good morning, New York. I'll get to the Lean On Me. Lean On Me. There's drunks and junkies all over Madison Square Garden this morning when I got to work after 3 days off. But let me start with the financial markets. My goodness, another one of those roller coaster, stomach-churning days apparently in store for us. The Dow now down 375. It was actually worse a few minutes ago, as Noam reported on his newscast. It was down almost 400. Then it was over down 400. I mean, I never remember these kinds of horrible swings. What the hell is going on? I have no idea. Is this about China? Are we that tied to China that they sneeze and we get pneumonia? I just don't understand what's going on. I'd love someone to tell me. We had the worst month in more than 3 years in August, which thankfully is over. But you know what's so baffling to me is our own economic news, our own domestic product up over 3% for the quarter. I mean, way over 3.7, something like that. It was very healthy. Just out this morning, construction spending is up 0.7% in July, highest level in more than 7 years, construction spending here in the United States. And yet the Dow down now 378. What the hell? It's very difficult for me to believe that this isn't all about the shysters and the hucksters manipulating the markets with their program trading and this and that. I just don't know, but it's very frustrating to see so many people's financial futures being affected by this crazy topsy-turvy market. Now, to the reason we played Bill Withers coming into the program today at 9 minutes after 10 o'clock. So I rode my bicycle to work. I've been off 3 days, you know, Saturday, Sunday, and yesterday, Monday. So I rode past four homeless guys sleeping on the sidewalk on 33rd. Walked my bike over to 31st. There's more over there. Then there's two drunk junkies aggressively panhandling outside. You know, we're in the Madison Square Garden complex. So you have violent crime down, even though you have this fight between Ray Kelly and Bill Bratton, between the Bloomberg alumni and the de Blasio folks. But you have violent crime down. I mean, everyone has to admit that. Near historic lows in New York. But you have this homeless, aggressive panhandling, bums on the street, in a way you have not seen. Noam Layden, I have not seen this since I used to have my daytime talk show in the 80s, in the beginning of the Koch administration, on West 43rd Street. We passed people defecating and this and that. And then we cleaned it up. I mean, Giuliani and Bloomberg cleaned it up. And now it's just so obvious to me that there is a gross policy failure here. And it's the evidence is clear to anyone with eyes. And now you have the, you know, in one hand, I regret the transferring or the ousting of high-ranking Latina in city government. But Lilian Barrios Paoli, that's it. Lilian Barrios Paoli, who is the deputy mayor for Health and Human Services, she has just resigned her job. Her job that was paying about $250,000 a year. I think she is the highest profile city official to take responsibility. But I just don't understand what is different now. Why do we have so much? And I am being as fair as I can. I am absolutely not taking a partisan stance in this. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. There's more bums, more panhandlers now, more street unpleasantness. than there was just 2 years ago. Something has happened that I can't figure out. It's not about the homeless shelters, it doesn't seem to me. It's not about the system that we have for dealing with people who are obviously either alcohol or substance abusers. But it's pathetic. It's horrible. I mean, it is. I mean, there were two guys who were actually had their face on the cement sleeping. You know, you usually see them with piles of dirty blankets and rags and stuff like that. Their cheeks were pressed against the concrete of the sidewalk. I mean, they were so out of it. And I just, this is the capital of the world. How can this be? I just don't understand. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I think heroin is a big part of it. I would say heroin's a big part of it because I see, I get a different view than you do because I come in at 2:30 in the morning. So I walk past that same Madison Square Plaza out there, and it looks like people are zoning out like they're wasted. And what I'm also seeing, which I hadn't seen in the past, is it seems like a lot of the homeless that are out there have mental issues. Now, I don't know if that's because they're out or they're out on the streets because they have mental issues. I'm not sure which came first.
Well, you know, it's how many guys do you see? Even when you see those with, you know, fit bodies that shows for sure that they're just out of Rikers or just out of some big house upstate. Still, they are substance abuse. They're stoned or drunk and babbling. You know, I don't, is it mental illness? These aren't, it's not that they're violent. I mean, maybe they can be violent. It's that they're pathetic and that they're in your face and that they're filthy and disgusting. And, you know, you want to be compassionate. And it's all men, you notice. I mean, once in a while you get a woman.
It's rare.
And it's rare. But they're mostly men of a certain age. They're all in their 30s, 40s, you know, and they're not the elderly. They're not the very young. It's almost like they're prime time. I don't know what the hell it is. Ladies and gentlemen, if you know what the hell it is, let me know. Here's Louie in Staten Island. I'm sorry, Coney Island. Louie, how you doing? What's going on? What are you thinking?
Hello, Geraldo?
Hi, Louie. You're on. 866-Geraldo.
Oh,
you're on. What's
God,
up?
It took me. Thank you very much, Geraldo. You know, Geraldo, I'm a retired detective. I did 30 years on the job, and back in the early 70s and through the 30-year stop and frisk has been the greatest tool the New York City Police Department had. The lives that were saved by cops taking these guns off the street is literally astronomical. And it's also was also a great investigatory tool because we used them to track down murderers and perpetrators of past violent crimes. It's really, I just don't understand. And I'm not talking about judges. I know Bratton very well. I know Kelly extremely well. I'm not going to get into their fight. But I am in the for the last number of years, I am in the position where I speak to many, many police officers on duty and off duty. Just last night, I was with 10 off-duty cops. We were talking about the job. They are completely demoralized. They don't want to do anything.
Well, that's Louie. I appreciate your service, first of all, and I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. So 866-Geraldo, this is not particularly about stop and frisk, because stop and frisk, you and I know him, have disagreed. I believe it is a very valuable police tool. You point out, and correctly, that it is making very often honest and law-abiding people suffer the indignation of having their space invaded by cops because the cop may have a quote-unquote suspicion about them. I get that. But what Louis says is different. What the cop we just heard from, the retired cop, says is different. He talks about a demoralized police force. Is that it? Is that the cops now feel disincentivized to go up to a vagrant, you know, piss-laden, crap-laden, rag-wearing, aggressive, panhandling vagrant, that they just say, hey, screw it. It's not, you know, it's not my job. That's a job for social services. That's not a job for a police officer. Is that what has changed?
Well, can I point out that since stop and frisk has gone away, that the crime rate for the most part across all levels has gone down?
I grant you
stated,
that.
Okay. I don't know that it was ever a police officer's job to go up to these homeless people.
Who
in
does
the streets.
It then? Who does
they,
it? School
they
teachers?
Call, no, they'll call people like the Coalition for the Homeless to come and see what they can do. They'll call in social workers,
city
social workers.
Anyone listening that works for the Coalition for the Homeless or any of these homeless organizations, please give us a call. Help guide me through what I'm seeing is the wreck. They worry about the tits in Times Square. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I mean, this is not about, who cares? Who cares? I saw a New York Post reporter painting her boobs and going out there a couple of days ago. Richard in Long Island. What's up, man?
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, I took my daughter, my 7-year-old daughter, in on Sunday to see a show, Aladdin. I grew up in New York. I've gone to the city all the time. And I got to tell you, I don't think I would ever take her back in again, even with my wife with me, because it just was very uncomfortable walking from Penn Station to the theater. At one point, we even passed a fella who was lighting up right there on the street and smoking a joint.
And describe that person.
You know, your typical New Yorker that might have been homeless, might not have been homeless, but the point is, you know, unfortunately, there's no, you know, you don't have the police out, and I can't blame them for not being
out
there.
Who do you blame then, Richard? Who do you blame? Just life?
Well, you can only blame one cause for this. I mean, the bottom line here is that there's a lack of disrespect for our police department. There's a lack of disrespect for the individuals that are our first responders that are putting their lives on the line when they go out there. And it has to start from the top. That level of respect has to be shown from the top down so that young kids that are impressionable understand that when you see an officer, you respect them. You know, you don't run away.
I'm with you 100% on that one. And I got to let you go, Rich. I'm out of time for the segment. But I think that is absolutely true. And I believe that in extending the discussion, now it's not about homelessness and vagrancy, but the shooting of that Texas deputy, you know, that whole thing is another thing that I have on my chest that I'd like to talk about as the program progresses today, because I see a disturbing trend there too, that whole Black Lives Matter thing. Now, I'm not saying that the homeless vagrancy thing is a black thing, because it's not a black thing. I mean, I see white ones and black ones and Spanish ones out there equally distastefully. But I want to know what you think, folks, what we should do. How do we get the New York City government re-energized in a way that is lawful and constitutional and equitable and effective to bring back the glory to the city? Now, I got a million other things on my mind. I haven't even gotten to politics yet. Hillary, emails, Trump, illegal aliens, in his word, the killing wave that doesn't exist. The head of the deputy mayor for Health and Human Services, Lilian Barrios Pauli. Lilian Barrios Pauli. She served under four mayors. She's leaving her job as deputy mayor of Health and Human Services. 69 years old, been getting paid $222,000 a year. And in terms of the homeless, I don't know if she is leaving because Mayor de Blasio is blaming her for the homeless crisis. I don't know, but she is leaving. That was our first big news item this morning. That and the Dow, which is paring some of its losses. Now it's down 340. It was down over 400. So let's fasten our seatbelts and take this rocky ride on Wall Street. But what are you thinking about? I got a million political things I want to talk about. But before I do, in fairness, let me get your comments on what's been discussed so far in Greenpoint. Gregory's on the line. Hey, Gregory, what's up?
Yeah, well, I was over by you guys, like in Chelsea Park, over on 10th and like 28th.
Okay.
Okay, and two guys there, they were buying that fake pot that the delis are selling.
Yeah.
They look fine. All of a sudden, they break out a pipe, they smoke it. Next thing they're out on a bench. One of them drooling, the other one with a beer spilled on himself. And I think that's one of your biggest problems right now.
I think you may be right. That's what that Jersey City, remember I went to that Jersey City cop's funeral? I forget his name, Spanish guy. Yeah, right. And that was, I forget what they call it. What do they call that when they put...
Well, there's K2. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different names.
Gregory, thanks for the call.
It's from Al...
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean that. Arthur in New York City. What's up?
Yes, Geraldo, how are you?
Thanks for calling.
You know what I think is that we need a strong Protestant leadership in this country again, including this city. The fact is that the people that have been leading us now for the last couple of decades were usually the ones that were the underclass, and they never assumed the fact that they would be in leadership position. And don't forget the Protestant.
Wait, did I miss? You say Protestant?
Well, yeah, because the fact is, Protestants were anal. They protected what was theirs. Today, the leadership is so unaccustomed to power that they just throw it away. For example, you mentioned the fact that the communists are loaning the capitalists money and you think they're going to play fair. This is pure naivete.
But why can't a Catholic, say, or a Jew do just as well?
Again, because they have accepted the role of being inferior. We, including myself, we all aspire to impress our oppressor. And our main oppressor around the world has been the Protestant. And the fact is, Geraldo, you mentioned a guy's face was on the ground. Did you get off your bike and see if he was all right?
You know, that's an interesting question, because in the break...
Stay there,
because that's a great question. So I was on my bike, and I looked at him, and I said, if I pick his face off the ground, what am I going to accomplish? He was alive, he wasn't dead, but, you know, what am I going to do with him? Where do I go now? What do I do? It reminded me of Ed Koch. Remember when Ed Koch said, please, New Yorkers, stop giving these people money. Because you give them money, they're going to turn around, they're going to buy a bottle of Manischewitz or some rot gut. Now they got anything wrong, Manischewitz, but some rot gut, and it's just going to continue the cycle. So no, I did not. But I did, Arthur, you astutely point out, think about it.
Geraldo, may I say one last thing? Under the Bloomberg administration, we have...
Are you a Protestant, by the way?
That's not the point. I'm just curious. When you're having a philosophical...
I'm curious. Are you or...
May I answer you? When you're having a philosophical discussion, you separate yourself from the issue. I am not the issue. The point that I made is more important than what I am.
But the personal bias is always important,
Arthur. Let me make my point.
Personal bias is always important.
May I make my point?
Protestant, Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopalian, Evangelist, what are you?
Well, my point is that under the Bloomberg administration, there were homeless in Lower Manhattan.
And he's a Jew, Bloomberg.
Excuse me?
He's a Jew.
No, that has nothing to do with it. The fact is he was a billionaire, so nobody...
So made him like a quasi-Protestant.
Oh, now you're being ignorant, but I love you anyway.
I love you. That's a new one on me. We needed to bring the Protestants back. When Bush was a Protestant, right? And is a Protestant.
I think
George
W.
Bush is a Protestant. Bill Clinton is a born-again Protestant.
We're talking about Wall Street also. Dow down 306 right now. It was worse. It was down over 400, so maybe it's going to fight its way back. I'm going to get to your calls at 866-Geraldo momentarily on the issues we've already brought up. I do want to broaden the discussion to this extent. I want to give kudos to Donald Trump for taking on the greedy, unpatriotic, high-rolling crony capitalists who take no risks, who game the financial system, and do not pay their fair share of taxes. I think that is courageous of him to take on the Republican establishment, which may be why the Republican establishment and he just don't get along very well. But having praised Mr. Trump on that issue, I have to hasten to add that his campaign against the so-called illegal alien murder wave is totally bogus. I'm going to tell you more about that coming up, but let me take your calls on the issues so far, starting in Bay Ridge with Pete. What's up, Pete?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Pete. You're on. What are you thinking about?
What am I thinking about? So I'm listening to the story about the guys laying in the street with their face down, and this is Manhattan.
Now, right.
I've been born and raised in Bay Ridge all my life, and when I'm dealing with this in Bay Ridge, it's really, really not good. Last night, I pulling up to a coffee shop in Bay Ridge, and there's three young ladies standing by their car. The guy walks over, holding a paper cup, filthy dirty, and he wouldn't leave him alone. He just kept, help me out, I'm a vet, this, that. So I had to get out of the car, and walk over and make the guy go away. So the question is, what do we do about it? That's what you asked. How did they handle it? Geraldo, how did the first Giuliani administration handle it? Whatever they did, that's what worked. And if it means forget some civil rights, forget some civil rights. I really got to pick these guys up, pick them up, and make them go away.
I do think, Pete, I appreciate it, Pete. Thank you very much from Bay Ridge there. You know, I think that the cops were more proactive, Noam. I think that you did see, like, vagrancy-type arrests more. Well, I don't know, more. I can't say that. I'm not looking at statistics. It's just my impression. I'll be honest with you. But my impression is the cops were more actively involved, or they would call the EMT. They would call someone, put them in an ambulance, or somehow they didn't leave them there. Now you see a cop on patrol and there's someone on the sidewalk asleep right next to them. You know, I don't get that.
You might be right about that. I'm looking to see what Giuliani did during his administration. And at one point, there had been this random attack of a guy here in Midtown by a homeless person. This was back in 1999. And the way the mayor responded to that and the police commissioner, they said that people who refused to be sheltered and lived on the streets could be arrested on the streets for sleeping on them. And they started doing so. They started arresting people who were sleeping on the streets. And that was back in 1999.
Now, the problem with that is, and I think that that's what we have to do, because the problem with tolerating it is that it's a real issue. I mean, what's his name, Richard in Bay Ridge just described the situation with the three ladies who got accosted by the aggressive panhandling. You know, you don't want it to just be out of sight, out of mind. You know what I mean? It's there's a reason that this population is growing, and you got to deal with the reason it's growing. But you can't solve it on the streets. When it's on the streets and when it's tolerated on the streets, it leads to more of it. I mean, that's why so many of these drug treatment facilities are around Penn Station, because the kids would come, they'd get hooked or recruited into prostitution, whatever it was, and they were right there, those agencies, Odyssey House and others, names I forget right now, right there, right around Penn Station. I want them to have a place to go, but there just seems to me to be much less of the involvement. Even firefighters I used to see being called to deal with some of these folks on the streets.
You know, Howard Safer was the police commissioner in 1999, and he said what he had his officers do then was offer services to the homeless who were sleeping on the streets first, whether it be a shelter or a place to find food or a place to live. And if they turn that down, then they could get a ticket or be arrested. And that was the way it was working, at least in 1999.
At least, what would a ticket do? In Tom's River, Tony's on the line. Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. Tony, what's on your mind?
Hi, Geraldo. I used to be a drama teacher, so I know a lot about writers who wrote about plays and misfits, like, you know, Eugene O'Neill, Miller. I could see the Bowery come in Midtown. Now, the reason I'm saying that is there are certain people who can't live a structured life, no matter how they try. And some of them were very intelligent that Eugene O'Neill wrote about. And we're living in a culture where technology, I believe, has replaced aesthetics. So young people no longer try to create beauty. And the lack of beauty is going to make us commodity-driven. So these people, these misfits, at one time, they had an ilk that they could be around that were very much like them, and nobody really paid attention to them because you had to go down to the Bowery like O'Neill did and some of the great writers to write about them, like the Iceman Comet. So we can't mix these two extremes. Normal people, what we call normal people, I call very structured people. An artist, the more artist you are, the more unstructured you want
to
be.
Tony, I have to leave you there, but I tell you, this is a beautiful, beautifully expressed sentiment, Tony. I appreciate that. But these are not artists. These are addicts. By and large, there's not one of them that I've seen with whom I've communicated that was not either an alcoholic or an obvious drug user. I think this is, to think that this is about people forsaking the structure of the button-down world is far too romantic. Maybe there's some of those. Maybe that's what led them to drug use or whatever. But the vast majority seem to me to have made a choice and then at some point lost the ability to make a choice and now are trapped in a world unstructured is the kindest way you could possibly portray it. I think it's much worse than that. And it affects many, many people who are going about, you know, life is hard. You have to get up. You have to go to work. You have to worry about paying the bills. You got to worry about your children and how your children are doing and then how your grandchildren are doing. And then you worry about the Dow and ISIS and everything else, traffic and everything else. And the last thing you need is someone coming into your space in a very unpleasant way, one way or the other, and disrupting whatever it is that you're thinking or doing or where you're going, or just the city that we all share and cherish. I mean, for a civilization to work, when you have 8.4 million people crowded in a relatively small geographic area, you have to have rules. And this is a rule that is being flouted. Is that the word? It's a good word.
Works for me, yeah.
All right. Hale, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Hale, could you do me a favor? Can you hold on? Let me take a quick intermission. I'll come right back to you.
Take your time.
All right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to come back to you. On this first day, Tuesday, September the 1st, kids getting ready to go back to school. They're either going back. Well, are your kids back yet?
Not till the 10th.
The 10th?
Yeah.
Oh, that's late.
It is.
So they start on Thursday. I think Seoul starts on the 9th, maybe the 8th, but certainly by the 9th. So next week, that kind of different rhythm comes back. You know what I was thinking about? Not the kids going back to school. That's the fun part, sort of. They, you know, they shine up their shoes and they get their uniforms and they have excitement. Who's your teacher and all that kind of stuff. I was thinking about the winter last year.
Oh, yeah.
I hate to bring that up, but
it was so long.
How horrible was that?
It was.
And just, you know, spending time in Massachusetts, they're still talking about the fact the snow just melted 2 weeks ago. I want to go back to Hale, as promised. Hale, thank you very much for holding on. So tell me what's on your mind, buddy.
All right. This has to do with Trump and the homeless.
Trump and homeless. Go ahead.
Trump and homeless. If Trump was a real star, he could prove himself. Instead of like the normal politicians, they hold the carrot over the head like the little rascals. They held it over the horse to make him walk. Prove himself before he gets into office. Scoop up all the homeless people. Put half of them in Trump towers that went bankrupt. Atlantic City's hurting. Okay. Now,
Trump's problem? Really?
Right.
Trump, you could criticize a lot of things, but I don't blame Trump for homelessness. He's a private business guy.
No. He's going to house them in the
I bet if there was a challenge, who of all of the candidates could deal with the homeless or deal with building low-cost housing, affordable housing, I think Trump could do that better than anybody.
Right. He doesn't have to build it. Atlantic City went under. Put them on a train, send them to Atlantic City, and fill the hotel rooms because a lot of people aren't going there.
Oh, can you imagine just what Atlantic City needs is a bunch of homeless people. I remember when they're going to put the Ebola people there.
No, they'll keep them in. They'll keep them fenced in.
Hale. But thanks. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Nelson in Edison, New Jersey. What's on your mind, Nelson?
Saludos, hermano Geraldo.
Hey, ¿qué tal? Feliz martes. Happy Tuesday.
Listen, I want to make a small comment. I'm a personal driver, and my boss has an office on 29th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen...
Right in the hood here, yeah.
Yep, and all these guys that they're talking about with the beer and the pants that they tie it up with ropes because they can't keep them up. I see them defecating on the street. There's a store on 29th Street between 7th and 6th, like I said, and they have this beer that's called Cobra. All right?
Yeah.
And this beer, they're not drinking Manischewitz anymore.
It used to be Colt 45, so this is better than Colt 45?
This is a Cobra. This is a different kind of beer. It's making them crazy. And I have some friends that own businesses on 29th Street, which I spend time talking to them. And they say when they come in the morning, they can't stand the smell of urine. I've seen them defecating right in front of everybody, and it's because of that beer.
I wonder if they should put porta potties on the sidewalks. I mean, there should be more places for them to relieve themselves.
You know, a lot of them are. That's what I'm saying. This beer makes them really crazy.
Yeah, no, I got you. I got you. Yeah. Thank you, and thanks for the report. And Nelson, tell me, let me ask you this: when you drive around with your boss, you see something, you call me, okay?
I was lucky that I got in. This is my first time, calling the show. I'm always listening to you because, you know, La Raza Boricua, you know.
Okay, La Raza. Gracias, hermano. I appreciate it. Thank you. But I want you all to be like my reporters out there. You see something, say something to me at 866 Geraldo. Anthony, I'm going to squeeze this in. Anthony from New Jersey, what's up?
Hey, Geraldo, how are you this morning?
Thank you. Good.
Hey, I want to make a quick point, and it's not so much, it's a segment of that population right now that has that opioid addiction issue. And since the crackdown of the prescription painkillers and the epidemic that this country is going through, you're seeing a spike in heroin that we haven't
True.
Seen since the 70s.
True.
I mean, you know, from the Young Lords.
I do.
House, I have family that are close acquaintances with you. Yeah.
Anthony, the music means I'm out of time, but I appreciate the call and the sentiments, and your observation is correct. We'll be right back after the news. Stefan in a while. Happy birthday, Gloria. I don't know, to get past this homeless issue, I think that really this is the defining issue now of the de Blasio mayoralty. Either he deals with the streets or he will go down as a failed one-term mayor. I think he'll be challenged in his own primary by other Democrats. I mean, that's the race that really counts in New York, unless I run.
You still thinking about it?
No, I just got here. John and Elizabeth, how you doing, John? What's on your mind, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great, Geraldo. Listen, your producer told me to tell you a little about my background. I got a BA in English. Also, I was a former news reporter. I'm a Vietnam veteran, went to college on a football scholarship. I tried law school and didn't do too well, and ended up knocking around for a couple of years to get my bearings, and ended up in the middle of winter 69 during the reign of John Lindsay being homeless in New York, and things were quite a bit different then. I guess I was looking maybe for some adventure, and also, you know, trying to kind of wondering what life was about. But back in those days, one thing they had in Grand Central Station, for 25 cents, you'd go down and get a shower, and the guy'd give you a towel and a bar of soap. And then also they had public swimming pools, you get a shower.
I remember the swimming pools and the baths down the Lower East Side. I think the baths are still open down there. But anyway,
yeah,
go ahead, John.
I would keep my clothes in a bag. I think I'd put a quarter every couple of days in a locker. I remember I was changing upstairs one time. I was kind of in a hurry, and I was in my underwear kind of behind the locker door, and a couple of cops says, "What are you doing?" I says, "I'm changing clothes." They says, "Why don't you do it at home?" I says, "I'm homeless." He says, "Where are you from?" I says, "Well, I'm originally from Cheyenne, Wyoming." The cop said, "Yeah, look, the guy's from Wyoming. He doesn't know any better, you know."
So what's your point, John?
Well, the point is, back then, there was more facility. Like, for instance, I asked a cop, and he told me where the homeless shelters were. There were a number of places you could go get a meal.
Well, the difference is, were you a drunk, John? John, hold on. Were you a drunk, or were you?
No, not really. I wasn't really a drunk. No, I would have some drinks, but I wasn't.
I think that's the big difference between. But I appreciate it, and I hope you're doing better. I think that's the big difference now. It's substance abuse. Even in those days, you know, coming from the Lower East Side and living on Avenue C for so long, I lived through the heroin crisis. It was the deadliest neighborhood in the world. I may be making that up, but I mean, it was really Avenue C, 7th Street. I remember my dad came helping me. It was the first house I ever owned there on Avenue C between 7th and 8th. And he helped me, and we'd look out the window and the people being killed. I mean, literally on the corner, there'd be stabbings and junkies everywhere. This doesn't seem that egregious in the sense that they aren't as aggressively. In those days, the heroin addicts would do anything they had to do to get the money to buy their dope. Heroin was more expensive, much more expensive, relatively speaking, than it is now. It seems to me now that it's like free, that they're giving it away. It's like every heroin pusher is like from a BJ's or, you know, one of the mass marketing discount. I mean, it's so cheap that you don't have to rob anybody.
Well, I don't know if that's true. If you talk to people in these suburban towns where the epidemic is really out of control, like Ocean County, the robberies are up big time because you're chasing that next high because it's so awful to come down. The consequences of coming down off that high are so intense that you're just trying, spending your whole day chasing the high.
But you don't see a comparable, in those days, for instance, stick-ups. Stick-ups, just give me your money or your life kind of things, was much more common. Now, you never, hardly ever see that.
Well, part of it is it's a younger generation that's doing the heroin now, maybe. I don't know what the age range was in the city in the 70s, but now we're talking teenagers to the mid-20s are the biggest abusers. Yeah,
that's who's dying. Right. Those are the biggest overdoses, no doubt. And it's because the heroin is so powerful. You say they're chasing the next high, which is correct. The problem is you chase it, then you shoot when you get it, because you really want to get that high and you want it desperate right now. And if it's purer than the one before, the one you got used to,
right,
that's where the overdose comes from. Let's go to Bushwick and Dennis. I don't want to stick the whole show on this, but I see the interest, so I'm not going to leave it. Go ahead, Dennis.
One of your big problems with the homeless and the people on the street, like you saw facing the cement, Catholic Church closing a ton of parishes.
Wow, yeah. Well, we have St. Francis of Assisi.
They used to feed them. They used to bathe them. They used to give them a place to sleep. And now you got this guy, Dolan, in charge of New York, who'd rather spend $175 million fixing up St. Patrick's Cathedral. You go out to the other boroughs, you don't see as many homeless and everything, but in Manhattan, I think he closed like 23 churches and schools.
You know, you got a point, Dennis. I have to say.
You know, charity begins at home.
I hear you. Marty just saw the new St. Patrick's. When I bike past it, there is a debate. All right, what's the role of the church, particularly when you have the People's Pope, Pope Francis, coming here, which is major. I mean, what's the date? You find me the date when
it's mid-September.
Mid-September. Well, find me when he's doing Madison Square Garden, because that's going to be a thrill. So you have this Pope Francis who bathes the feet of the poor, a humble man. I mean, an amazing. This is the reason he took Pope Francis. Saint Francis of Assisi. He wanted that role, and you contrast that to the grandeur of Saint Patrick's, and you think about okay. Yeah, I'm not putting this on the church, believe me. But I just want to, and I want to be like that Protestant buff we had earlier. He said the reason the country's going to hell in a handbasket, we don't have enough Protestants in power. But in terms of the Catholic Church and the $175 million it's costing for St. Patrick's, most of it is donated money, as I understand it. Okay, could that money go to, alleviate the problem that we're talking about? Probably, but you need a city like this. Oh no, I had that junkie. I was just going to take her. She just called in. A junkie just called in and just hung up. I guess they lost the attention span. But honey, call back if you're listening to me. A city like this, as I was saying, needs grandeur. Also, you need the heart, the spirit to be uplifted, as well as the corporal body. But the closing of the neighborhood parishes to the extent they did provide services to this population, you know, I can see the logic in that. Okay.
By the way, September 25th at 6 p.m., Madison Square Garden, the Pope will hold Mass.
The Pope will hold Mass. Now, is it already sold out? I would imagine.
I think you have to be in the know to get a ticket, yeah.
You have to be in the know. Will it be televised?
I imagine it's going to be televised, sure.
I would hope so. Okay. I'll take one. Here's a slight variation on the topic. John in Brooklyn. Hey, John, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Geraldo. I was driving up to Saratoga, I think, when you were on Thursday, and I swear to God, listening to you, I thought I was listening to Obama.
That's good. Did you bet on American Pharoah?
I was there. No, I bet a horse that was the wrong horse. I'll just say that.
The wrong horse. Like, the American Pharoah lost in the, what was the stakes? What do they call that in Saratoga?
The what?
What do they call that horse race that American Pharoah lost? Traverse Stakes, is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, how are you going to respond to the Pope requesting that we open our borders more to illegal immigrants?
Well, that's an excellent question, which leads me into my next topic, and I appreciate the question because, I tell you, before I get into you, John, you hold on because I have another John I have to get to before. I don't want to, when someone calls who's an addict, I have to take the call. John, go ahead.
Hi, my name's John. I am a drug addict. I'm in recovery, but I understand the homeless situation. I understand the drug addict's mind. And
so what are you addicted to? John, tell me what you're addicted to.
I was addicted to opiates. I had many surgeries on my knees. I used to ski a lot, and I just took to it. I chased the high. I loved the opiate high. You know, heroin.
So where did you get the heroin that you used, John?
Oh, it started off, it always starts off with Percocets and doctor-prescribed drugs. And what's happening, I see a lot of, now that I'm in recovery and I'm in the rooms of a 12-step program, is that people start off with legitimate pain issues. They take the drugs, and they're just more prone to addiction. They're just, you're not an evil person. It's just you're more prone to it.
But where'd you get the money to feed your habit?
I manipulated. I lied. I stole. I did whatever, you do whatever you can to get the money, I robbed. I robbed for my family. I just robbed. But, what happens is, and I wanted to talk to you about this, is on the streets of Manhattan, what you're witnessing is called reptile brain. That's when your brain, when your frontal lobe shuts down, when you're in high, pure addiction, in a pure run, a pure addiction run. What happens is you notice these people they're like in a different world. They lost the ability to socialize, to have social cues.
So what should we do with them, John? What should we do with the people who were like you at that time?
Well, you don't enable them.
So you don't give them money when they say, give me a buck for a cup of coffee.
Right. They're not going to take the money and go and buy food. the gentleman, the person next to you said it, you chase that high. And that's what it's all about, chasing the high. Look what they've become. And it takes a huge spiritual awakening for a drug addict to come out of this coma. And that is,
John, I got to go, but good luck to you, and I appreciate you sharing your story with us. I still think, I totally get that. And I understand why there's more junkies now than there were 10 years ago. I get the crackdown on prescription drugs, and now followed by you chase the high. So where do you find the high? You can't afford the opiates anymore, or they're unavailable, so you go to the illicit drugs. I get that. But I think that a show like this has to focus on something much more practical. Yeah, we get that. And yes, we need more recovery and all the rest of that. But I think that what we have to focus on is the role of the uniformed services and the city administration in dealing with protecting society writ large from what is increasingly a nuisance and sometimes worse. I think that's what, if I have any moral of my story this morning, that's it. Mayor de Blasio is failing to deal with that. All right, that's my last word on that topic. We had a caller earlier, just a couple of minutes ago, John, talking about Pope Francis and immigration. I want to talk about a public personality, not so lofty, but a dominant personality nevertheless, Donald Trump, talking about the illegal alien murder wave, whether that is true or bogus. And also, we've got to squeeze in a little about Hillary Clinton and her emails, many hundreds of which have just been dumped by the State Department as they deal with these Freedom of Information requests. I want to get to some of these other topics before we run out of time. You have Donald Trump here, Matt, speaking about the murdered children. Let's play his Trump.
People came into the country illegally and killed their children. And it's a very, very sad thing what's happening with our country with respect to whether you want to say illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, illegals, and nobody wants to talk about it. We just spent a lot of time discussing what happened. And the folks were telling me something that was incredible. Whenever somebody hears that it was an illegal that was involved with the death of their children, it becomes politically incorrect for a politician to help them. That's how messed up our nation is.
All right, that's Trump saying something that I do not believe is true. When there's an illegal immigrant who commits a murder, nobody wants to talk about it. Are you kidding me? We have murders in all of the cities in this country. The murder of Katie is the one that I'm thinking about right now in San Francisco, that innocent young lady shot dead on the pier there in San Francisco that became the biggest news story for a week. Anytime an illegal immigrant commits a crime, contrary to what Mr. Trump just said, it becomes a much bigger story. It's almost as if a murder committed by an undocumented immigrant wears on the American soul far more egregiously than a murder committed by a citizen, despite the fact that undocumented immigrants commit far fewer violent crimes per capita than citizen Americans. We talk about how relatively violence-free or freer our city has become. The second largest city in the country, Los Angeles, similarly experiencing historic low rates of violent crime. Which are the cities suffering from the alarming spike in murders? Did you see the front page of the Times today, the New York Times? Milwaukee, Baltimore, St. Louis, New Orleans. These are all cities with relatively tiny Latino immigrant populations. Tiny. Milwaukee, Baltimore, St. Louis, New Orleans. Why doesn't Donald Trump, if you want to deal with the spike in murder, the alarming spike in murders, then why don't you follow the statistics? You know what's politically incorrect? What is politically incorrect is to talk about the reality that we are to blame. We're not importing murder from Mexico. These are homegrown murderers. Milwaukee, Baltimore, St. Louis, New Orleans, Detroit, Cleveland. Why don't they have the guts to take on that issue? Now, what's happening in Baltimore tomorrow? No.
Well, we're going to hear more about this case, the Freddie Gray case.
The case where the unarmed black man killed by the cop, well, killed while in police custody. And what was it, eight cops indicted, or was it more?
It was seven cops in all. And so we're going to hear what whether the case is going to be heard in Baltimore or not. And maybe taken out of Baltimore.
There is a
thought whether they all pled not guilty, all these police officers. So there's going to be protests outside of the courthouse. And Baltimore police officers have been told they cannot take off tomorrow. They have to be at work. No excuses.
Oh, so there's protests, beard, and the change of motion.
Exactly.
I have venue. Barry Gibb. All right. Bee Gees. Yeah, no, it was good guy. They didn't know who was being celebrated there. So Barry had a great song. Bee Gees were fabulous. I mean, his duet with Barbra Streisand. Get that one. Who Let the Stranger In? That was the best. Yeah, get that. It was the best anti-adultery anthem ever. Who Let the Stranger In? So you were saying about Baltimore, we got cut off. I want to be very clear. Is disruption tomorrow feared in Baltimore even as we speak?
No doubt there is fear that there could be problems in Baltimore tomorrow, because they're going to be prosecutors, defense attorneys set to argue whether Judge Barry Williams should dismiss the case or recuse Baltimore State Attorney Marilyn Mosby. This is the six officers involved in the Freddie Gray case who've all pled not guilty. So tomorrow they're going to try to decide whether they should be tried separately or together. And then in a further motion that will happen in a week from now, they'll decide whether to move the case out of Baltimore. But cops on the street in Baltimore have been told they cannot take time off tomorrow. So there clearly is some fear that something's going to happen outside of this courthouse. We're also hearing from cops in Baltimore who say they're going to take off tomorrow just for that reason. They don't want to be involved if something breaks out. Not from a lot, just a few. But this is the word that the Baltimore cops have been told, no time off tomorrow. Whether you have it or not, you have to be on the job.
Baltimore suffering as many homicides as New York, a city that is 14 times larger. So you read about this feud between Bratton and Kelly, between the immediate past police commissioner and Bill Bratton, the current police commissioner. So Bratton says about stop and frisk, the number one issue we heard over and over again was that the black community, rich, poor, middle class, was concerned about this issue, stop and frisk. The commissioner, whom they like quite a bit, and Michael Bloomberg, or Mayor Bloomberg, who polled well for a long time, just were not listening. They were kind of tone deaf to this issue, stop and frisk, so we worked really hard, myself and Mayor de Blasio, to respond, to which Ray Kelly responds, that was not the feeling of much of the communities of color, it was the view of activists, I'm telling him he's wrong. You know, I don't know, I think that I was shocked, for instance, people put Al Sharpton down. I still have a higher regard for Reverend Sharpton than I would say 99% of the people listening to us right now. But the one thing that Sharpton did that impressed everybody was when he had people march against stop and frisk to go to Mayor Bloomberg's home on 78th and 5th, 79th and 5th, you know, right in there. And I saw them, I was there, I covered it live, and I saw maybe, I don't know, 30,000 people, many of them young men of color, marching down Fifth Avenue in an orderly March. I may be exaggerating the number, but it was clearly thousands. It was a very impressive turnout. It wasn't the Puerto Rican Day Parade, but it was a very impressive turnout. And that's when I started to agree with you that this was an issue that was pervasive amongst at least a certain age demographic within the community of color, that that they were fed up with having their lives interrupted. And it was a revelation for me. You know, one of the things, I'm old, but I'm still flexible. And that was one of the things that I noted. But I go back to Ray Kelly and go back to the Bloomberg administration. And next week, I'll be honored to go to one of the publishing parties for Ray's new book, Commissioner Kelly's new book. And I love the guy, and I miss him. Not that I put Bill Breton down in any way, shape, or form. He's also a great cop. They just obviously, they have different bosses, and they have a different operating philosophy. The proof is in the pudding, and I come back. I thought that the only way to keep levels down was stop and frisk. I've been proven wrong to a large extent in terms of violent crime. But I think that it is lamentable in some ways that there is any friction between these guys, both of whom have served the city, Breton and Kelly, so well. And I don't want us in the media to gin up a fake confrontation.
I wonder if it's the publisher trying to gin up something here, because the book comes out this September 8th. The book is on newsstands, Amazon.
I get that.
You know, the timing seems awfully suspect considering Ray Kelly, who I admire, has been
so
very
cynical.
Quiet
don't be
up
so
till
cynical.
Now. Right? Have you heard Ray Kelly talk a lot?
He was waiting for his book to be published.
Of course.
But Breton is responding. It's not like that's a fake. You know,
no, but that's Breton because he's the current police commissioner. I just wonder if the timing seems a little odd to me that it's just less than a week before his book hits newsstands or bookshelves or whatever. So,
Reed in Wayne, New Jersey. Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind, Reed?
Hey, Geraldo. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
We met way, way back at the 1-to-1 marathon.
Oh, boy. You go back to my my golden era.
That's
my whole life has been a follow-up from that. But go ahead.
Well, it was a great thing you accomplished back then. But I just want to go on to this, what you were talking about, Donald Trump. And I think what he said, and I think what you might have misinterpreted, you know, he said that these victims were saying that politicians won't get involved.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about it when an illegal immigrant is involved. That's what he said.
Well, not nobody. He said politicians. And I think that's the difference. I mean, because the press will get all over it.
Okay.
But if you look at the San Francisco case...
Oh, well, let me ask you this, Reed. Do you like Donald Trump? Just curious.
Yes, I do.
I do, too. But here you have a situation where, for the first time ever, the Monmouth University poll released yesterday shows Dr. Ben Carson in a virtual tie with Donald Trump. Do you think this is the beginning of the end of Donald's powerful surge?
I think what happened is, I think as other people get... you know, more time, that they will certainly increase in popularity. No doubt about it.
So you think that, well, do you think he could still win, or do you think that it was just a summer fling?
No, I think he's going to be around for a while. Don't underestimate Donald Trump.
And nobody ever made any money doing that, but I appreciate the call. Thank you, Reed. What do you think, Mr. Layden?
I think what's interesting here is I think people like what Donald Trump is saying, Republicans who like him, but maybe some of them are saying, you know what, he's a little too bombastic. But Ben Carson is like him. He's not a politician. He's saying some of the similar things, but he seems to be a little bit quieter in the way he delivers the message. So maybe he's a safer candidate to vote for. And maybe that's you're seeing people peel off the Trumpster and go towards Ben Carson for that reason.
You have a situation where you have Trump, number one, we're tied in Iowa, but he's number one every place else. Then you have Dr. Ben Carson is number two. Number three is Carly Fiorina. So what do these three have in common? They had nothing to do with the Republican establishment, right? The Republican Party establishment. Remember, we used to have Renz Priebus, the RNC chair, on a lot. I think we should bring him back and ask him, what the hell, why is it that the GOP primary voters are so utterly rejecting the GOP establishment? What is it about the establishment? I'm talking about, well, you know, I can name them all. I don't, Bush and Walker and Cruz and Rubio and blah, 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 blah. What is it that they are so out of touch with their own constituency that the three top candidates would be getting all of the attention and affection? And now that I bring that up, the fact that CNN is not including Carly Fiorina in the debate because they took a, it was the sum of all polls that ended on August the 6th, and she's had this huge surge in the last month or so. I mean, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Hey, like, what is that about? How can they say, well, she wasn't, that was, I understand you had a rule. First of all, it was a stupid rule. I mean, in the sense that, isn't it supposed to be as of like yesterday or, you know, how the voters feel today in the churning dynamic process of American national elections? You want the very latest. You want to be on the cusp. And to not have the only lady.
And from a ratings point of view, you think you'd want her up on the stage?
Of course you'd want
her. For that alone, yeah.
Of course you'd want her. I saw Chris Christie just, you know, I remember when I had some affection for the New Jersey governor before the state went to hell in a handbasket. But he did say something on, I think it was Jimmy Fallon last night. He said in the last debate, he had 20 questions go by without him being asked. And he vowed that he was not going to allow, he was not going to sit by idly when the others trampled all over him and the I remember Dr. Ben Carson said at one point in the last debate, I wondered if I was ever going to be called on again when he made his final statement. But it'd be interesting to see if Christie can get that that carcass of a campaign reinvigorated, or if it's not like the living dead. One of the things I wanted to talk about, and I kind of ran out of time, was one of the callers pointing out that Pope Francis wants many nations to be much more flexible about their borders and this huge migrant phenomenon that we're all seeing here. I want to say a couple of things about this, and this is a theme that I want to develop going forward. We have real problems on the southern border, particularly with the ebb and flow of the undocumented immigrants. That's a real problem. There's no doubt about that. I think that Trump is onto something when he says Mexico, as a government, bears some responsibility for that phenomenon. They know about it. They know that people either originate in Mexico or transit through Mexico en route and do nothing about it, indeed, even encourage it, it seems. We can deal with Mexico because Mexico is a government that exists. It is dysfunctional in many ways, but there is a fabric of civic and civil society in Mexico that we can deal with. The problem in Europe, we also have the contiguous borders, but there are oceans that separate us from the real problem in Asia and Africa, just as the oceans separate us from the wars that rage in those, unless we choose to be involved. They also separate us from this situation, this crisis that I saw with my own eyes. Well, I was in Italy. I didn't see it. It was in the Italian media every day, all day. The difference between the dysfunctional Mexican government and these other governments in Asia and Africa is that those governments are non-existent. It's not that they're dysfunctional. They do not exist. In Libya, there is no government. In Syria, there is no national government. That's why you have all of these people, hundreds of thousands of people on the move. They are on the move, desperate. You see them. They're at the border of Hungary. They're passing through Italy and Greece and Macedonia. They're coming in their hundreds of thousands. There are no oceans other than the Mediterranean Sea. You see, tragically, even in that relatively small and benign body of water, you see tragedies happening every day, drownings and so forth. How society in Western Europe deals with this crisis. And plus, hidden among them, you've got some percentage of crazy Sunni Muslim fanatics who are coming to blow stuff up. You know, maybe they're 1/100 of 1%. So that, I think, is a big, big difference that we have to bear in mind. And thank our lucky stars, the United States is protected by the huge moat of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. But how Europe deals with this, I think, in many ways, will determine its future as a union, as the continent. There's so much to talk about, and I just started, but I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.